Also want to extend a Christian greeting to each one this morning. It is a blessing to be here. Welcome to our visitors. Good to see you all here. Beautiful day to worship the Lord. And we've certainly had a lot to think about already. I appreciated the devotional, Abner. Just the call to just to reverence God for what he's done and who he is and what he continues to do for us. Just a blessing. I invite you to turn to the book of Ecclesiastes. Should explain a little bit, I suppose, how I got here. I was preparing for a message, and I don't even have it entitled yet quite. But the message was going to be something to the extent that, or is it a question? Is it okay to enjoy pleasures? So, as I was studying this, I kind of headed back to the book of Ecclesiastes I was reading through Ecclesiastes, and all of a sudden I realized that I should maybe lay some foundation here before I get into that message. And the longer I looked into Ecclesiastes, the more I thought that maybe I just do a series of messages from the book of Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes, I don't know how many of you enjoy reading that book. He's got some very, very practical things to say about life and living and just all kinds of good things, good nuggets about life and wisdom, about work and time, our relationship with God. And so I pulled a few gems from Ecclesiastes. I'm going to do that this morning. Touch on the pleasure thing just a little bit, but circle back to that in another message, I think. So the message title this morning is taken from Ecclesiastes chapter 1. And there's a few nuggets here in chapters 1, 2, and 3 that I will touch. I'd like to share with you, if we have time. We'll go to It's Time to Quit. But the first message is entitled Living Life in a Vapor. That's kind of an interesting word picture, isn't it? I was thinking about that last evening a little bit. It's about full moon out there, and you had clouds kind of crossing the moon. And I thought about, a cloud is actually precipitation. It's moisture. It's a vapor. As I watched that cloud cross that moon, that's exactly how our life is. Now, it's hard to imagine a life that short, that fleeting, that brief, that God likens it to something like that to our lives. It's a vapor that comes and goes. And it goes and we kind of forget about it if we're still here. Life is temporary. So I'd like to read Ecclesiastes 1. And there's a lot of things in here. I don't think we'll be able to get to. I won't be touching everything that comes here. But I find it very interesting and beneficial to us to just consider what the preacher, who most think is probably Solomon, maybe not, but he was a preacher, and this is what he said. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, saith the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What profit hath a man of all his labor which he taketh under the sun? One generation passes away, and another generation cometh. But the earth abideth forever. The sun also riseth, and the sun goeth down, and hasteth to his place where he arose. The wind goeth toward the south and turneth about unto the north. It whirleth about continually, and the wind returned returneth again according to his circuits. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full, unto the place from whence the rivers come, and thither they return again. All things are full of labor. Man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. The thing that hath been, it is that which shall be, and that which is done is that which shall be done, and there is no new thing under the sun. Is there anything whereof it may be said, See, this is new? It hath been already of old time, which was before us. There is no remembrance of former things, neither shall there be any remembrance of things that are to come with those that shall come after. I, the preacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem, and I gave my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all things that are done under heaven. This sore travail hath God given to the sons of man to be exercised therewith. I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and vexation of spirit. That which is crooked cannot be made straight, and that which is wanting cannot be numbered. I communed with mine own heart, saying, Lo, I am come to great estate, and have gotten more wisdom than all they that have been before me in Jerusalem. Yea, my heart had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. And I gave my heart to know wisdom, and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this also is vexation of spirit. For in much wisdom is much grief, and he that increaseth knowledge increases sorrow. Now, in some ways, this writer could be viewed as, my, but he's disillusioned, he's cynical, he's kind of discouraged about everything, maybe. And maybe he was. I think he was, at least to a point. I'm going to go with the premise that Solomon was the author. I have a feeling that's who it was. I won't be too dogmatic about that. But this man realized, after his experience in life, that life is very temporary. And we know that. We've had a number of funerals in the past year here. And these folks were people who we didn't think were that old. Age does catch up to you. We heard a little bit about some of these things at our last prayer meeting. And last Sunday morning devotions, Brother Amos shared. I was also at that reunion, and I commented to my wife on the way home, I think it was, that our friends are getting older. It got pretty obvious, you know, the ones we associate with. You can see them all sitting around and visiting and talking, and you don't really see yourself, but you see everybody else, and they're looking older. Life is temporary. It's a vapor. He uses the term vanity of vanities in verse 2. And in our setting, New Testament setting, we often use the word vanity as a word to describe excessive pride, maybe, or that kind of a spirit. But the Hebrew word actually has a bit of a different meaning, and that word means vapor or breath or smoke, something that appears for a moment and then disappears. It's vanity. So vanity of vanities means the utmost of vanity. Something is just futile. There's no meaning in it. The most fleeting and temporary thing imaginable. It's actually a superlative, and it's a Hebrew way of expressing something that is the most. So they use terms like the Holy of Holies, And that is the Holy of Holies is the holiest place. We have the term King of Kings, and it's the King over all kings. And so when they say vanity of vanities, it's referring to the most fleeting and elusive vapor. Something just passes. I believe this writer is observing that, and we can see it as well, and we're caught up in it. And this message today is just an encouragement, a reminder to be careful, because I believe as we analyze our own lives and as we see people operating around us, there are lots of things that people chase. They chase wealth, they chase pleasure, achievements, wisdom. Talk about worldly wisdom there. Fame, possessions, all those things that we think are important here in life don't provide lasting meaning by themselves. They're like a mist that vanishes away. I don't believe that this chapter is teaching that life is worthless. Rather, it's teaching that life is temporary. And back in James chapter 4, we have that familiar verses. And the context there is just a warning. It says, go to now, you that say, or think again about what you're doing. Today or tomorrow, we will go into such a city, continue there a year, buy, sell, get gain. You don't know what's going to be on tomorrow. For what is your life? It's even a vapor. It's a vanity that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. What you really ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall live and do this or that. And then just goes on to give the encouragement that to the one who knows to do good and doesn't do it, to him it's sin. So life is temporary. It's teaching here, it's telling us that human accomplishments don't last forever. We just can't control everything, and the only lasting meaning that we can find in life, the only thing that's going to satisfy and help us to, the only thing that's going to be worth chasing after in the end is fearing God and living according to his purposes. And the Ecclesiastes, a writer here, toward the end of the chapter, concludes with that. In chapter 12, verse 13, he says, let's hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. And then he tells us the importance of that, emphasizes in verse 14, God shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil. And so there we hear the conclusion of the matter. So a simple way to summarize that, I think, the vanity of vanities is that everything that's pursued apart from God is temporary, ultimately temporary, and it's unable to satisfy the deepest needs of the human heart. It's not going to satisfy. You can chase these things, and we do that sometimes. But we soon figure out that these things are not what life is all about. It's not what makes life meaningful or purpose filled. I've experienced this myself, and I've seen it happen to others as well. That there comes a time, I don't know if this is a midlife crisis or what. So that's what they're talking about when they use that term. But there comes a time when you realize that, you know, if I'm getting my fulfillment out of my job, if I'm getting my fulfillment out of sports, if I'm getting my fulfillment out of living pleasure-filled lives, if I'm getting my fulfillment out of my growing bank account, there comes a time when you realize that this is just not enough. It just doesn't satisfy. And I think this is where this preacher came to by the end of this book. He had experienced these things, many things, and we'll look at that in chapter 2 just a little bit. In just a bit. But just pulling a few things out of this chapter 1. It talks about one generation passing, another generation coming. The earth abides. One generation comes and goes, another comes and goes. The earth stays the same. Sun rises, goes down, and then hastens to the place where he arose again and does the same thing again, day after day. The wind has its currents. The rivers, the water has its cycle. Rains and runs down creeks into rivers, out to the ocean, evaporated, and does the same thing over again. These are cycles, that life cycles. Talks about the fact that there's really nothing new under the sun. Sometimes we think there are, or there's something we've never heard of, but if you'd ask past generations, if you could ask past generations, they would all probably say that these are things that they've seen before. And then in verse 17 and 18, this man, this preacher, gave his heart to know wisdom. And I think this is the wisdom of the world, to know madness and folly. I perceive that this is also a vexation of spirit. It's kind of an interesting phrase. A vexation of spirit. I don't know if you've ever been vexed or not. The Bible tells us that Lot vexed his righteous soul from day to day as he lived in a city that was given toward sin. Vexation of spirit might mean something a little bit different here, but just means that vexation of spirit has the meaning of chasing something that you can't catch. I don't know if you ever watched a dog chase his own tail. Just can't quite get there. It's always just a little bit beyond where he can reach. Those times, at least. It's getting, grasping, or wanting something that can't be caught. And it brings frustration and disappointment. And I think this is what this preacher experienced. Frustration and disappointment. He had chased after these things, looking for fulfillment. And he got them. He enjoyed them to a point and realized that it just wasn't enough. Just wasn't enough. I believe that wisdom without the fear of God brings a lot of grief, according to verse 18, brings a lot of grief and sorrow. There are people that we think are wise and smart in this world who don't have the fear of God in them, and the things that they possess, the knowledge and wisdom, worldly wisdom that they have, is something that's going to bring them sorrow and disappointment, because they just don't do to us what fearing God and doing His will do. It's just not enough. There's another phrase here in chapter, actually this is in chapter 3, I'd like to just pull out of this for a bit. Well, let's start in chapter 2 and verse 12. To 11, I'm sorry. It says, "Then I looked, and all the works that my hands had wrought, and on the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun. Under the sun just means this side of eternity, this while we're on the earth, living on the earth. And the context of that, of course, is trying all kinds of things. We notice in chapter 2, the first part there, that this man, we'll call him Solomon, he sought his heart's desires, and he gave himself to pleasure, to tremendous building projects in verses 4 through 6. He gave himself to wealth and possessions, verse 7 and 8, to music and entertainment in verse 8, and to status and success in verse 9. And he reached heights of achievement that most people, or few people, ever experience. And as he was a man who had the means, the wherewithal, to if he wanted something, he bought it. And he wanted to enjoy something, he tried it. And he did all these things to the fullest. Just the other day, I was looking at a house that is coming up for sale, and had to do with my work related. I'm not buying a house, but this house was, I'm sure, at one point was the pride and joy of the person who built it. But as I looked at it, it was a mess. I mean, someone had not kept up, had not done any trimming. You just about couldn't see the house from the road. It was actually on the corner of a road, two roads, and you could only see little bits and pieces of the house because it was so overgrown with hedges and thorns and growth that, and the house was just, the parts that you could see, you could tell that it was not in good shape. Somebody built that house. Somebody finished that house. Somebody roofed it. And I'm sure it was a good job when it was done back in the day. But you know, looking at it now, it's not worth anything hardly, I don't think. And this is what we have to realize, is that these temporal things that we put so much stock in, so much effort into accomplishing or bringing to ourselves or attaining, if you will, recently I saw an old magazine with a 1965, I forget what kind of car it was. It looked nice on the picture, you know, his old magazine back from that day. But then you go to most of those aren't around anymore. You see a few that have been kept in good condition. Most of them are on the junk heap. Been recycled and probably making other automobiles with it, with the leftovers. But that's what we go for. That's where we're tempted to put a lot of, to that's what we're tempted to overrate. And I'm sure Leon and others who have experienced the death of loved ones here recently would confirm the fact that, you know, when life comes to an end, it has a way of sorting out what's really important and what's not important anymore. And I know we need to live. We need to make a living. We need to pay our bills. But let's not get so wrapped up in these things, these temporal things, that we forget that there is something that needs to be taken care of in our hearts that those things won't fill or fix. In chapter 3, and Solomon found this out. He got to the end of experiencing all these things, and did it give him lasting satisfaction and meaning? He said, all's vanity. These are things that pass. They're not worth it. I've been chasing the wind. I've been grasping for something, trying to find something in these things that can't be caught. And I'm frustrated and disappointed. It's the feeling of reaching a goal that you had and realizing that goal is not giving you what you thought it was going to give you. They reach the goal and they ask, is this all there is to it? Maybe you're there. Maybe you've been pursuing something that is temporal. Maybe you're asking that question, is this all there is to life? Achievements can satisfy for a season, but it's only relationship with God that provides lasting meaning. We heard about that in the devotions this morning. I really appreciated that opening devotions. In chapter 3, there's a verse I'd like to point out to you. I think you're there already, actually. Verse 11. Well, let's start in verse 9. This kind of brings all that into focus that I was just sharing. So I was great. This was the preacher. I increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me. And whatsoever mine eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my portion of all my labor. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought, and on the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun. That was actually chapter 2 and verse 9 through 11. I'm sorry. The verse I referred to is in chapter 3 and verse 11. And this is another important concept that I believe that we know. And I'd just like to remind you of it again this morning. 3 and verse 11. He, God, hath made everything beautiful in his time. Also, he has set the world in their heart, so that no man can find out the work that God maketh from beginning to the end. And so he goes on to say, I know that there is no good in them, but for a man to rejoice and to do good in his life. And also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor. It is the gift of God. I know that whatsoever God doeth, it shall be forever. Nothing can be put to it, nor anything taken from it, and God doeth it that men should fear before him. These are profound verses. Sometimes, I just realize in a new way some of the depth of some of these verses. But I'd like to especially focus on verse 11, where it says that God has made everything beautiful in his time. He set the world in their hearts. And I think that meaning there is a bit different from what it face value there. Some translations put eternity in there. He has set eternity in their hearts. And so I think that's what helps us realize that, you know, we're chasing after something temporal, that feeling, well, is this all there is to life? God has set that in your heart for a reason. He set eternity in your heart. And it's his spirit. It's just something speaking to us that we realize this, we know it. Going after material things as the purpose for our life is something that doesn't satisfy, it won't fill the void in our hearts that is there until God fills it. In the beginning of chapter 3 there, he talks about there's various seasons in life. There's a time for everything. There's a time for birth. We had a few babies born here just recently. There's a time for death. We've had some of that as well just recently. We're in planting, right? There's time for planting. And we're already starting to harvest some of those things we planted earlier in the spring, so at least in our gardens. Time to cry. There's a time to laugh. There's a time to mourn, and there's a time to dance. And there's just a lot of things there that there's times for. There's times, there's things that are proper in one setting and not right in another setting. There's a time for everything. God, I believe, and this is what the writer is trying to help us to see, has a proper time for everything. There are seasons in life that we don't understand. There are seasons in life that we struggle with. We struggle with seeing the good in them. I thought about that over this, I think you can tell by now, this 60s reunion kind of impacted some of us. And I thought about it as we were discussing various things out there. You know, we've gone through seasons of life. And from the time that we were together as a youth group till now, it was about around 40 years, 40, 45 years ago. And a lot of living has been done since then. There's a lot of struggles have been struggled with. There's a lot of battles won and some lost in those years. There have been good things, and there have been difficult things. And some of those difficult things and some of those good things are ongoing. We heard about some of the good things this morning. God's faithfulness to us, and just the blessings we enjoy because of what we're just experiencing. I'm not sure why sometimes, especially when you read some of the situations in the world. How is it that we're so blessed? And then there's some difficult things that are ongoing. There's handicaps that children are born with. There's deaths that seem untimely. There's sicknesses that you wonder about. What is God thinking? What was His purpose for this? These are things that happen. These are things that... There was a song that we used to sing back in the day, and we sang it again at the reunion. And I think it took our minds a lot of places as we sang that song. It was just that song, One Day at a Time. And you know, it's just that way about life. We do life, we live life, we face the things that come our way. Some are enjoyable, some are not. Some are just the things that come with life. And some families have difficult things to go through, and we work together with them on that. And there are others who are really enjoying some of the same things the others are not enjoying, and so we rejoice with that as well. But this is life. But you know, it's those seasons in life, God has a plan, a purpose for them. He knows what He's doing. We may not understand why we're going through what we're doing, going through in that season, but there's a time for it and there's a reason for it. And God sees the bigger picture, the picture we don't see. A difficult time or season may not seem so beautiful right now, but God's work, I've found, is often seen. The good in something that's difficult is often seen down the road a bit, as something, you realize that God had something good in mind. He did something good in my heart, even though it was hard. So God has set the world, eternity, in their hearts. A sense that there's something beyond this life. And so we naturally ask questions. Questions like, why am I here? What is the purpose for my life? Is there life after death? You ever catch yourself wondering? We know that. And yet sometimes we start thinking about some of those things. Does anything truly last in a world with so much change going on? Does something last, truly last? And these are questions that we grapple with. Animals don't wrestle with those questions, but we do, because God has placed that in our hearts. He's placed eternity in our hearts. And there's a time for everything. Life unfolds in seasons. One of the things, seeds I was going to plant this morning, it was actually going to be more of a message, but then I got started on this, as I mentioned earlier. And some of the pleasures that Solomon experienced, I don't want you to go too far with this, but if you'd have been Solomon and could have done exactly what you wanted to do, what you thought was enjoyable to the fullest, if you could have bought anything you wanted, what would you have bought? How would you have done it all? And then there's the question of, I'm going to plant this seed and come back to the later message, I think. But I was reading in Gary Miller's book, and I thought I'd just tech talk. And I would encourage you, if you don't have it in your files, you don't have it in your libraries, go ahead and get one. It's a good read. It's got some really practical things in it. And one chapter talks about the burden of perpetual pleasure. Now, can you imagine, would you actually call pleasure that is ongoing, perpetual, it doesn't end, a burden? He does. If you could have it all, like this preacher did, do you think that you'd be happy and fulfilled at the end of the day? I quote from his book, "This really isn't an easy question. In spite of any quick answer you might give in a Bible study, the reason you long for things is because you actually suspect you'd be happier if you had them. You know in your head that continual pleasure wouldn't satisfy, but it will take the power of God within your heart to come to grips with this truth and transform your longings and desires." Twenty-seven times in Ecclesiastes, Solomon speaks of seeking fulfillment from those things under the sun. And there's a negative light passed on it, but I do believe that God wants us to enjoy the things he's blessed us with. But enjoy them in moderation. Don't live for the pleasure. I mean, moderation is a really good thing. Even the simple pleasures of life like water. We enjoy water, but too much of us drowns us, you know. And so I think it's true that way with a lot of other things as well. I believe it's important for us to remember that our deepest longings will never be satisfied by earthly objects. Again, I'm reading from his book here. Things don't satisfy. A researcher made this observation after interviewing a group of rich Americans. The respondents turned out to be a generally dissatisfied lot, whose money has contributed to deep anxieties involving love, work, and family. Indeed, they are frequently dissatisfied even with their sizable fortunes. Most of them still do not consider themselves financially secure. For that, they say, would require, on average, one quarter more wealth than they currently possess. Now here's the kicker. The average net worth of these people was $78 million. So things don't satisfy. These folks were making, on average, $78 million, and they needed about a quarter more than that to feel financially secure. And they were unhappy. They were not happy. Their relationships, their purpose in life was not good. It was bad. Things don't satisfy. So I'd just like to insert that and maybe double down on it next time around. Next time it's my turn to preach. But let's examine where we're at. What are we striving for? What's important to us? Abner asked the question, so what did you think about first when you woke up this morning? That's a question that each of us can answer, probably. But that's probably where your heart is. Is things you think about first and last are probably the things that can try pretty accurately predict or tell us where we're at with life and the things that are important. It does tell us the things that are important to us. So as we go to work, and as we go to play, and as we pursue our hobbies, and as we live life and spend our money, a reminder that we are stewards of the things that God has blessed us with. And so let's use them responsibly, because I believe one day we will give account of how we've used the things that God has given to us. Keep your focus on the Lord, and not on the things that are temporal, because they don't satisfy. Lots of folks have tried it. The preacher had that great experiment going on with trying everything and looking for something that satisfies. He couldn't find anything. Maybe we're experimenting with something right now, trying to find satisfaction in something that doesn't satisfy. He's already tried it. Take his counsel and focus on the things that are purpose and meaning and tend toward life. Let's kneel for prayer.